Hey, it's Blair and Barker. Hey. Today's Wednesday. We've got a busy show. Jeff Montgomery, Royals pre- and post-game analyst, former closer, will join us. Jason Stark, Joseph Siddle, a Blue Jay Central, will be along as well. And we promise you we're not going to spend 2 hours talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. But let's start by talking about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. because it is the story out of last night's 3-2 loss to the Royals, three unearned runs. We talked about the play that Vladdy didn't make on Blue Jays talk, Kevin, but before we deal with Vladdy's hitting, et cetera, I love the way you explained what happened in that play as a former first baseman. So let's deal with that. Explain that play from a first baseman's point of view.
Yeah, it's real simple. He some of the time gets very stationary, puts his foot in the middle of the bag, and it's very hard sometimes for him to just have fluidity over there, right? It's, you just want to be sort of nice and easy, free and easy to be able to, you know, on a throw when a guy's running towards the second baseman, he's going to throw across his body, the ball, have a little bit of movement to it. You just want to be able to sort of be fluid with your entire body to be able to move around the bag to, you know, not have to stretch, you know, in awkward ways and miss baseballs and those kind of things. It's real simple. If they give you an edge of the bag, use it. I mean, it's real simple. Instead of running over and sticking your foot in the middle of the bag and then stretching and, you know, having it look a little awkward and feeling awkward to you and those kind of things, you know, it's, again, I hate to say it, he's a human being and occasionally he's going to make a mistake.
It's his first error of the year. His first charged error.
But first baseman, if you didn't notice, do get paid to catch the ball that are thrown from, you know, defenders. So I would assume that will be cleaned up. You know, he'll have a little bit more energy running over there to the bag, not getting so stationary, not standing so straight up and down, getting a little bit more athletic. You know, and again, I've been there before. I've struggled offensively. Sometimes, you know, you lose mindset and aggressiveness, and, you know, you're more worried about why'd you miss the 91 down the middle instead of seeing the ball from the defender being thrown to you and catching the baseball. So I'm not worried about his defense. I don't think most people should be. I think that is, you know, he's done enough and, you know, moving side to side and arm strength and accuracy of the arm. And, you know, if he finds the right glove that's not breaking, look, he's going to catch most of the balls that are hit to him thrown to him.
If he was hitting better, if he was hitting the way we think Vladdy can hit.
Well, they would have won last night.
They would have won last night. And we would just be saying, you know, well, boy, the guy, first error of the year. You know, look back to what we thought Vladdy was going to be defensively and how good he's been, et cetera, et cetera. Kevin Gausman was asked last night about the three unearned runs, the Vladdy error. And I want to play this clip because it's interesting hearing Kevin Gausman talk and how he kind of addresses several issues, but goes out of his way to really try to reinforce the idea that, you know, Vladdy's my first baseman. And anytime I hear that, I get what he's doing. But anytime I hear that, Kevin, well, let's play this and we'll tell the R.A. Dickey story I'm going to get to. This is Kevin Gausman after last night's game.
No, I mean, he just kind of, you know, hit me on the shoulder, and that's kind of understood that that's, you know, my bad. I mean, listen, this game's hard. And I've never played first base, so I can't say anything to him. So it's unfortunate because obviously it led to, you know, a big inning and we weren't able to kind of get anything going after that. But, you know, it's baseball.
It's a pretty kind of even field perspective. Does that come naturally to you, or is that something you kind of worked to get to in the course of your career?
You know, I mean, nothing more I can do about it now. So, you know, it stinks, but you know, I still want Vladdy as my first baseman. So, you know, I'm very confident in his ability over there. And so, you know, that's why it stinks. But, like I said, that's the game. And, you know, unfortunately, we're playing really good baseball. And something like that is, you know, it's unfortunate that, you know, it ended up being as important as it was.
That's just always, anytime I hear somebody say, I want a guy as my first baseman, I keep thinking of R.A. Dickey. First start at the Rogers Center after the Jays have made that big trade in the offseason. And J.P. Arencibi had three passed balls. First start of the year at the Rogers Center. And R.A. Dickey in his postgame comments. Nobody says to R.A. Dickey, do you still have confidence in J.P. Arencibi? Because it's the first game. But R.A. Dickey looks at us and says, I know what you guys are thinking. I know what you're saying. But I just want to say it right now. I've got full confidence in J.P. Arencibi. And I'm looking around and I'm like, any of you, was anybody here thinking of asking him whether or not there's going to be anybody else but J.P. Arencibi behind the plate? But I always think of that whenever somebody unsolicited says, but I still want this guy to be my first baseman. The reason I played that is because, look, you've been in clubhouses. There is such a discrepancy, Kevin, between what these pitchers are doing for this team and what the hitters aren't doing for this team. And this goes back to last year. And I'm thinking specifically of the starting pitchers. At some point, right, doesn't a sense of frustration build for the pitchers? Like, you want to be a great teammate and everything. I get that. And you know what? Kevin Gossman's being paid to be Kevin Gossman. He's not being paid to worry about Vladdy going 0-for-5 or missing a play. But damn, at some point I'm going, dudes, like, don't be afraid to drop a six spot every now and then.
Yeah, well, I think up until now, Berríos and Yusei Kikuchi are the only two guys that could probably say that. The other three stars, they've had some bumps in the road, right? They just aren't going out there and as predictable, I think, as John would like them and Pete Walker would like them, and they would actually like themselves to be on an every five-day basis. So, you know, I don't think they're there yet. But, again, I have been in clubhouses before where, you know, somebody's doing well and pops off to somebody that's not doing well. And they're grown-ups.
And
that's
there does.
It's not going to go well.
And I can tell you there are Blue Jays clubs that I've covered where there was a split between the pitchers and the hitters. I mean, there just was.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's a big deal. Like, I think sort of everybody knows what they're trying to do and what they're trying to accomplish, and you do your job and don't worry about what other people are doing. But there will be some times where if this continues and the offense is just sort of, you know, not doing things that I think some people expected them to do, you know, not to be a 10-score run game, a team or a lineup, but sort of, you know, be themselves and contribute and maybe score 6 or 7 or 8 every other day. So, yeah, look, I think it's early enough in the season, and boy, I hate saying that, but I think it is early enough in the season that everybody's still trying to find their way. But I would say if this continues, John and you know, the coaching staff will have to handle it the way they're supposed to be handled.
Let's talk about Kevin Gossman for a minute. Credit him for grinding through a game last night, 3 unearned runs. You know, he hung in there, but 2 strikeouts. Mm-hmm. 12 ground ball outs, a lot of soft contact, which is a good thing. Yeah. And again, that error, that play is made, Jays probably win that game 2-0, or they have a chance of winning it 2-0. But Kevin, 4 whiffs last night on the splitter, no whiffs in the fastball. He threw 9 sliders. His fastball usage is down from last year. It's been kind of a so-so start for him. Are you reading anything into what we've seen from Kevin Gossman at all?
Yeah,
he mentioned something last night that I didn't pick up on that you said might suggest why he's the fastball.
Yeah, well, he's talking about timing issues, right? Getting the ball out of the glove on time, having good enough arm speed. You know, that will sort of tell you why the split finger's not splitting all the time. The velocity on the fastball's not constant to where, you know, he can sort of not have to turn around and notice that it's not where he wants it to be consistently. His fastball's somewhere in that 94 to 95 range. When it's there, that sort of makes the split finger move. You got to get in swing mode. It's enough fastball to get you swinging at split fingers that you don't want to swing at. Look, is it a grind that he threw 16 pitches the first inning, 13 the second, 15 the third, 13 the fourth?
And that doesn't sound horrible.
Yeah.
Does it?
I mean, most pitchers would take that, right?
Yeah.
That would be able to, when you don't have your best velocity, your split finger's not doing the things you want it to do, you're not getting the swing and misses that you'd like to get, and you're still doing those things, being efficient. I mean, if they wouldn't have had the defensive woes in the fifth inning that they had, he would have gotten – you know, all the way through the set. He wouldn't have went seven scoreless, so they would have won the baseball game. So, it's, you know, some people say it's a grind. I say sometimes when you just don't have your stuff, you want to pitch your way through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's grown up enough to be able to do that. Get on the same page with your catcher. You know, make sure your misses are good. You know, don't repeat the same pitch in a bad spot more times than not if you do that, because you know how to do it and add, subtract, especially against a younger team that will sometimes get themselves out. It will look sort of the way it looks. So you call it a grind, I call it pitching.
You probably noticed during last night's game that Kevin Kiermaier left the game with a hip flexor issue. Anytime anything involving the hip flares up with Kevin Kiermaier, you worry a bit, because he has had hip and back issues before. The Jays were led to believe, the Jays haven't confirmed this yet, but certainly there are reports out there that Addison Barge, or something we talked about last night in Blue Jays talk, I mentioned, okay, if Kevin Kiermaier goes on the IL, who would they likely call up? I said I want to see Barger up here. It appears as if that's the move, although nobody, the Jays haven't confirmed that. At least I haven't seen them confirm it yet. Addison Barger, left-handed bat, had a good start at AAA. He can play multiple positions. I don't know where he would fit in the everyday lineup here. Kevin, your thoughts on bringing up Addison Barger?
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I think he's earned it. He's hitting over 300. He's got 21 RBIs in 19 games. He's hit three homers, I think. Like, it seems like
his OPS is really good.
When he's getting a good pitch, he's hitting it hard, which is what they're not doing at the big league level. So if he can come up
here. And he's a lefty, so that.
Yeah, look, I think that's sometimes when in the gist of things right now, the way the lineup looks could be a little overrated. I think it's just more about, can he have a quality at bat against a guy with a runner on base? I think that's sort of where they're at. And if he's given that to him at the minor league level and there's an opening, you're going to call him up. Now, how much he plays, when will he play? I'm sure it could be against righties only. And they'll do a little platoon thing, right? If he continues to hit a little bit, and depending on how long Kiermaier's out and those kind of things, you know, you like it. You'd like sort of, you earn it, you get called up. Hopefully he can hit the ground running and have some quality at bats, because they are searching for anybody.
Do you read anything into the fact that they're supposedly, and again, this, I don't think this has been confirmed, but, you know, we're not seeing them bring up a Nathan Lucas type. I don't even know if Nathan Lucas is in the organization anymore, but we're seeing them bring up one of their prospects as opposed to,
I think they like Addison spring training. Like, the word that I'd gotten, the people that I'd talked to, they liked his at bats. They like what he brings. He's a threat. The pitcher knows that they got to make a good pitch against him, or he could hit a homer. You know, he's more of a left center, right field line guy, but that's okay, right? It's get the ball in the air, hit some velocity. You know, you don't have giant holes in his swing. He's got a big daddy hack, which is, you know, party out front kind of thing, which is what you like. You like the, you know, if you're going to do it with some authority, do it with some conviction. And I think the people I talk to anyway, likes that. And they're going to give him opportunities. He starts hitting, he's going to play somewhere. He'll DH, he'll play left, who cares where he plays.
And
as long as he's hitting and giving them some at-bats, John Snyder will put him in the lineup.
And, you know, he and Aurelvis Martinez and Damiano Parmigiani to a certain degree they are the, like, this is kind of the, I'm not going to call them the next wave, but these are the guys in a perfect world that help form the core of a post-Vladdy, I'm not saying they're going to do it, but in a perfect world, they form the core of a post-Vladdy, post-Bo reality. So I think
Barger doesn't have to play every day. Aurelvis Martinez, when he comes up, because of his age and his swing and what he's trying to do, you would think he's playing more times than not. Yeah. So they got to be careful when they call him up. But, again, you got a dude at the minor league level who's hitting, and your big league team ain't hitting, you call him up.
Used to be, right?
I mean, look,
a lot of these
guys have to get hurt for a guy to get called up, but you take advantage, right? You knock that door down. You don't walk through that door. That's what they always used to say to us when we were young. Don't walk through it. Run through it.
Yeah.
And hopefully he hits the ground running and, you know, gets a couple of breaking balls, hits a homer, maybe gets some fastballs, hits some doubles to left field, like does some things that, you know, gives his team a little spark, some energy, like some, you know, just some fun. They just don't look like, again, when you're not hitting, you're not having any fun. But, boy, they just need some spark, some guy to come up. And just everything he swings at, he is hammering. Yeah. And hopefully he comes up here and does that.
Yeah, it's last night the Jays were 2-for-10 with runners in scoring position. Okay. They left 10 on. Alejandro Kirk had another Alejandro Kirk game offensively. Well, I mean, come on. Look, I was the one coming out of spring training. I bought into Alejandro Kirk. Well, I'm selling now. You know, the Royals helped them out last night. Adam Frazier made that base running error. Kyle Isbell deciding not to throw home on a sacrifice, shallow sacrifice fly with Justin Turner at third base. I think Justin Turner was surprised that he didn't have to slide going home. I mean, the Royals.
I think he did slide.
I did slide? Okay. But I mean, there was no throw. But the point is, you know, every win's a good win. But man, that was a game that.
When you're a run prevention team, you have to win those games.
You have to win
those. That's, exactly. I think, how you're supposed to say that. And they did everything right except to catch a ball from a third baseman.
Let's have the discussion we had on Blue Jays Talk last night, and we will be doing Blue Jays Talk. A reminder that tomorrow, because it's a day game, we will be on Blue Jays Talk on TV following the game. It's a 2:10 start in Kansas City. Hopefully, knock on wood, the weather holds up. We talked about this a little last night. You said something to me on the air. I thought about it for about an hour off the air and came to the conclusion that you were absolutely right, which is rare. But I asked you, as did a couple of texters and a caller, okay, it's great that John Schneider is being patient with his lineup. We know that John Schneider told Dan and Buck and the folks in Kansas City yesterday when he was asked, that look, we're going to keep the lineup the way it is. So it's going to be Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Turner, come hell or high water. A lot of people are saying, though, okay, you've made moves before with the lineup. You've dropped guys before at the lineup. You dropped George Springer last year. You dropped Bo Bichette a couple of times. Why are you continuing to leave Vladdy in the number two spot? Your point to me was, okay, Einstein, you design the lineup then. Move Vladdy out of the number two spot. Where would he go and who would go in there? And I mean, the only option I had, was Dalton Varsha.
Dalton Varsha's fault Vladdy's not hitting?
But I want to leave Dalton Varsha. No, and I want to leave Dalton Varsha where he is right now because it's working. It's a great point. I don't know, Kevin, but I understand why people ask that question.
I mean, it's an easy answer, right? It's an easy thing to do to move guys around who are not getting it done. I think you have to have other options. Like, you know, I guess right now you could put a Justin Turner in the two spot. You could put a Vladdy in the cleanup spot.
But
just because of the at-bats that the 2-3 guys are getting with runners on, runners in scoring position. I mean, the way they got the lineup constructed in is the way they've been talking to us since spring training. Yep. The core and the first four guys are going to take us where we are going to end up.
Do you think they are
getting more bats in those spots than other guys are. And it's working out, right? You're getting your better hitters in those situations.
Kirky just keeps so happens popping up
right
with...
now. Look, Kirky's off balance. You make up your own mind why you think he's off balance. But he has a lot of off balance
swings. He's kind of winning the Matt Chapman Award this year for the guy you don't want to see up with runners in scoring position, who always seems to be coming up with runners in scoring.
Yeah, he's a follower, not a leader for me, right? It's the sort of, you have other guys that are leading the way, and he sort of just fills in the blank with the flat bat path and can backspin a double to right field and, you know, drive in a couple of runs because he's a decent bat-to-ball guy. So, you know, look, I think when you don't see your buddies doing some things, you do things outside the box, you swing too hard, you know, you try and chase things, you try and pull balls in the air, you're not capable of doing that, and you know, sort of it leads to the way it's looking. I mean, it's a collection of a bunch of guys trying too hard, and I just don't know how you get them out of that, right? It's Vladdy has timing issues, right? It's the gather is just not matched up to the path of the hands. His hands are by the face. That means the point of contact has to be in front of the front leg.
Kevin,
that means the timing from the ground up almost has to be perfect. Is Vladdy perfect? Nobody's perfect. Why do you think now they teach at the minor league level to try and force these guys to get the barrel in the zone further back, lead with your back elbow? The reason why they do that is more room for error. There's no perfect human. Most guys are not always going to be on time with their lower half.
Otani's pretty close.
They throw breaking balls. They throw a bazillion miles an hour. That's why it gives you more room for error. Right now, Vladdy, that's why we see him swing through 91 miles an hour. Yeah. That's the reason why. It's the foot's not getting down.
Kevin.
The timing out front is not there.
Kevin, this is what we – is he uncoachable?
No, absolutely not.
This is what we've been saying
there's
for
been three
2 years.
There's been 3 or 4 people coming to town all just, the time, so obviously
I
not.
They've had just about everybody but Jesus try to teach him to hit, and it hasn't worked.
Yeah, it's
so
hard to do that. Like,
well,
it's hard to hear four different ways to say the same thing.
On.
Like, that's hard to do, right? And again, it's not lack of effort. Like, it's not like he's going in there saying, how do I suck for 2 weeks and not help my team win a baseball game? Like, he's not trying to do that. But it is the fact of every player has to come to the realization that what you're doing is just not working.
Kevin, he's a good kid.
So that's where the stubborn part comes
in. He's a good kid. He's a hard worker.
Absolutely.
We know he's smart. Is he maybe not uncoachable? Although I think uncoachable and stubborn can sometimes. No,
it
how many
stiff.
Hitting coaches
how
has he
you,
had?
How would you know that? Like, are you in the batting cage with him? I'm not. Have you ever had sat down and had a conversation with him in the room? And Edwin and Dante Bichette, I have not.
No,
so
but
how
you
do
know
you
what?
How do you ask that question?
But they have.
How do you answer that
They've
question?
They've all had
You've
that conversation.
You've never heard anybody say that he's uncoachable.
They've all had
you
that conversation with him.
You just notice what you're not seeing from him consistently.
Kevin, everybody.
And who's been in town? And obviously, he's had success doing it one way and making a
in
drastic
a minor league
change.
Park.
Nah, he's had success last year. You act like he's just a pile of poo that has done nothing at the big league level. When that's not the case.
He hasn't been as good
it's
as we expected him to be.
The expectations are so high with him, and he hasn't lived up to it, which is a fair statement. But to say that he's just... You know,
just
a run-of-the-mill, you know,
well,
dude that don't know how to hit.
You were the one who said that.
Come on.
You were the one who said that you stopped thinking about him in terms of being a great hitter.
They don't grow on trees, great hitters. It's okay to be a good hitter. You can make a ton of money being a good hitter and a good player.
Is he a good hitter right now?
Yeah, no, well, obviously not.
Okay.
He's fighting things. He's fighting to help his team because he sees what's going on around him. He's a human being. So, look, do I think the mechanical change or adjustment is tough, is going to be tough for him to make? Absolutely. He gathers a lot. It's a big positive move. Because of the way his hands go by his face, the barrel is basically the last thing you see, which means the point of contact is very, very small. As hard as they throw and as much as they spin it to him, his mechanics and timing with his lower half have to be almost perfect. I've said this to you a bazillion times. Why do you think a pitcher goes, gets it quick, and holds it for like 10 seconds? And he's like starting it, stopping it, start. They're doing it on purpose. They see the same thing I see. It's a big, giant move. It's just, can he sort of think to himself, this is not working? Can I go to maybe a quicker toe tap just to allow my bat, my hand path, to actually have a point of contact that's consistent? That's what it is. The talent's there. The rotation, the bat speed, it's when it's in the right spot, in batting practice, in the cage, he hits the ball harder than anybody. The sound's different. The distance different. The ball comes off his bat the right way. You don't want to change the bat plane because that's who he is. But you do want to change how he gets the contact. And that's, I think, the frustrating part. I'm running out of breath here.
You can imagine what he's going through.
You can imagine what he's going through
because the dude
does have talent, and he wants to help out. And when you're not helping out, everybody's been there.
But it's just, everybody's been there. But again, it seems to me that he's had so many people talk to him.
A lot.
And I've got to think that at some point somebody said to him the same thing you said to him.
Have they? Sounds to me like it's more direction, right? You know, you get your foot down when you get your foot down. As long as you're driving and square with your shoulders. You see Edwin over there, and Edwin's like pointing to his left shoulder. Like, make sure you drive that shoulder. What if it's not there on time? Baseball is a timing thing. Why do you think when Bo came on our show and he's thinking, he said actually out loud, in counts, I'm going to try and do damage to the pull side. Okay, the first time you hear that, he is a guy that wants to get the barrel in the zone way back here. Lead with your back elbow. That means the point of contact now when you want to pull it has to change. You have to make contact more out front instead of allowing yourself to hit balls deeper into your middle of your body. So why do you think he hits 18 hoppers to right field? Because he can. Because when he gets his barrel in the zone, now the mindset has changed that I got to get it going sooner. I got to gear it up quicker to catch this thing out front. And then all of a sudden you start struggling, grounding out, not hitting the ball the way you want to hit it. So you got a bunch. Vladdy's not the only guy that's in between. There's a lot of guys that know and understand how the pitching's doing and want to contribute because they think they and feel like they are really good hitters and can do that. So I'm rooting for him. Like, I know I've been through it. It's not the easiest thing to do because it's like Groundhog Day. And then you heard Vladdy after the game last night saying that we're going to continue to work hard. Oh, well, it's basically like I'm going to go to the field. I'm going to do the exact same thing that I always do, expecting a different result.
Playing right into my hands.
It's just, it's.
Why would you do that?
I think that, well, that's the stubborn part, right?
Why would you do that?
I've had success. I've been paid a little bit of money doing it one way, and change is very hard. It's like the John Gibbons thing.
That's true.
Why do guys, when the shift, left-handed hitters don't hit the ball to left field? Because that's not how they made it to the big leagues, Bark. Like, it changes very hard. So hopefully he tweaks some things. He makes minor adjustments just to get it started a little sooner so the point of contact will change. If that happens, then you will start seeing balls hit harder in the air, and hopefully he can help out. So, I mean, if I'm losing breath trying to explain this because I'm excited, you can imagine what these dudes are going through. I mean, it's because they know they're talented. They're in the big leagues. They're making quite a bit of money. I mean, you ain't paying a guy a lot of money if he ain't no good at his craft. It's just they're in between and they're trying too hard. And a lot of times it's hard to separate those things and try less, quicker. It's not the easiest thing to sell, and it's not the easiest thing to do. So hopefully tonight they settle, change point of contact, hit the balls harder. How'd I do, Jeff?
Good. What do you think the chances are of that happening?
Not great, but that.
Anyhow, all right.
It's baby steps. Baby steps.
I know. Yes.
You need to root for them.
Yes.
Is there trying?
It's a try league. Mean, we all know it's a try league.
For some, it is.
It's a try league.
Not for former MVPs, but for some, it is.
It's a try league.
Just about not trying so hard. Or trying.
Jeff Montgomery is the Royals' pre- and post-game analyst. He's a former closer, 304 career saves. He's a three-time All-Star. We're going to talk to Jeff Montgomery about the Royals. I also want to talk to him about Jordan Romano. And one of the things that's kind of cool about Jeff Montgomery is he became a full-time closer at the age of 27. And through the 90s, he was the only pitcher in baseball to lead his team in saves every year. He had a good career from the age of 27 to 37 as a closer. We're going to talk to Jeff Montgomery about how you continue to improve and rack up saves as you get older. All that ahead. We're not uncoachable.
Well, so half this room is.
It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, the Fad at Sportsnet.
Covering the Blue Jays from an analytical perspective. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker for a Wednesday. Barker's calmed down a bit now. Had to fan him off during the break. Anyhow, that's it. I don't think we're going to talk about Vladdy for another, another 20 minutes.
At least
Joe Siddle joins
us. Until he punches out a couple of times.
Nothing can happen between now and game time.
That's a great point.
Unless John Schneider, maybe he sits him for a couple of days. Anyhow, we'll talk about that later on with Joe Siddle. Jason Stark joins us as well. Want to bring in Jeff Montgomery. He is the Kansas City Royals pre- and post-game analyst. A former closer, 304 career saves, three-time All-Star. Jeff, thank you for joining us on Blair and Barker. I want to talk about the Royals, obviously, but Jordan Romano, the Blue Jays closer, picked up his 100th save in the first game of the series against the Royals. And I wanted to ask you, Jordan, I think, moved into a full-time closer's role
21.
Around... In 21, around the age of 28 or so.
Yep.
I know your career, I think if I'm not mistaken, you became a quote-unquote closer at the major league level around the age of 27. I know you had a really good run through the age of 37. And I just wanted to ask you, Jeff, what is the secret or the key for closers? Understanding the game has changed a bit and we're in a different time now, but what is the key for closers once they establish themselves to maintain a level of consistency, you know, relatively late into their career?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. And first of all, thanks for having me on today, guys. And I always love talking baseball. And it seems like every time we're playing against the Jays, we have a chance to visit. So thanks again for allowing me to share some thoughts with you all. But regarding Romano, I mean, I think it's a situation for a closer. And you're right. The track was fairly similar with me with regards to my age. And I didn't get to the big league till age 25. So it's a little bit later on. I had a couple of good seasons. And then after probably my best season ever, I really kind of felt like I had to take a step backwards because the Royals went out and they brought in Cy Young Award winner Mark Davis from the San Diego Padres. Right. So I went back into like a setup role. And due to the unfortunate, lack of performance with regards to Mark Davis, I was given the opportunity to close again. And then the following year, I kind of took a backseat once again, and it just took a while for me to really get established. But once you get established, I think the biggest key is going into every game knowing that you have a chance to help your team win a baseball game. So mentally prepare, physically prepare, go in and do your job. And I've always said one of the most rewarding feelings that I ever had with regards to my career was shaking my teammates' hands at the end of a baseball game. Because if you're shaking a teammate's hands, that means you won a baseball game and you had something to do with it. And throwing that last pitch of a game, it's just a special feeling. And especially when you're at home, I mean, the crowd really kind of elevates the level of intensity and gets you pretty fired up. And, you know, when you're able to get that last out, it's just a tremendous accomplishment that day. And if you're able to do it consistently over time, you know, those numbers add up. And we saw Jordan get his 100th the other night, and I'll never forget my 100th. We're playing in the old ballpark in Cleveland. I got mine against the then Indians and gave the ball to my father. And, you know, it's just, you know, those milestones are things that you never forget.
Jeff, as you aged, did you change your routine in the bullpen at all? Or once you found something that worked for you, did you, you know, do as much as you physically could in order to maintain that routine?
I stuck with the routine all the way to the end. And once you learn what works, and you know, I just felt like it was important for me to stay with it. Things were a little different in the late 80s, early 90s. It wasn't really till, I guess, maybe the early to mid 90s when the roles kind of changed from being more of a two inning save guy or two plus inning save guy to being just a one inning save guy. And I think Tony La Russa with Dennis Eckersley out with the Oakland Athletics in the late 80s, that's when that really kind of started to formulate that change. And then it got to be where closers were just one inning guys. Now, we saw our guy last night go out for two innings against the Jays. And I said on our postgame show, that's pretty typical for what you would have seen from a closer, you know, in the 80s and early 90s. That was just the way things were generally. But it changed a lot. And I think every player, they understand what really kind of makes them click and what they need to do to get ready. And I stayed with my same routine all the way up to my final year. I had a terrible injury. Well, it wasn't a terrible injury at the time. I had a hip injury, which required replacement. So I was really hampered with that during the last year of my career. So I had to do some things differently that last year. But other than that, I stuck with my routine as far as my daily conditioning routine and the strength and maintenance program that they have you on. And there are times that I had to actually go away from what the team recommended, the physical guys, what they recommended, because I knew what worked for me and I knew what didn't work for me. And anytime they would be recommending something that didn't work for me, I just have to say, hey, I'm going to have to keep this out of the program.
Jeff, you think it's easier to close in 2024 than it was to close when you closed?
Well, I think it is for the guys who are doing it, because they're throwing, you know, 98 miles an hour and I threw 88 miles an hour. So I had a little bit more of a challenge with regards to that. But I think you can still get similar, you know, results just doing it in a different style. For me, it was fastball, curveball, changeup, slider, and I had to have the hitter thinking about all four of those pitches in order to have success. I couldn't have them sitting on my fastball at 88. They would be teeing off. So I had to throw sliders on 3-1 counts, and I had to do, I had to pitch backwards occasionally just because I didn't have that level of stuff. Now, one of my contemporaries, Dwayne Ward, with the Blue Jays, he had a different, he had a different set of tools to work with. He had that tremendous splitter and good fastball. So he might be in a little bit different, but I think everyone, you just have to recognize your strong points and really stick with those. But I think probably today it may be a little bit easier to close just because, one, you've got that power arm to work with, and two, it's going to be a short stint. It's only going to be a one-inning situation.
Okay, two outs in the ninth inning. How are you throwing Bobby Witt Jr.?
He's so disciplined at the plate for a young player. I think he's a guy that he can go the other way. I've seen him hit probably as many balls out of the ballpark to right field as I have pull the ball to left field. So like any really good hitter, I think the most important thing is you cannot make a mistake, because they generally are going to make you pay for that mistake. I've seen Bobby Witt Jr. make a lot of outs on quality pitches, and just like any hitter, some of the best hitters in the game. They make out on quality pitches. So the most important thing is focus and really, whatever pitch you're going to try to execute, just make sure that you finish that pitch and don't allow that hitter to beat you. And there are times that they're going to beat you. I mean, they get paid a lot of money to swing the bat. So you might execute a pitch exactly the way you wanted to execute that pitch. And good hitters sometimes will find a way to do some damage with it. And you just have to tip your cap to them. But the mistakes generally – a much higher percentage of mistakes are going to be hit by, those really good quality hitters.
As someone who watched a lot of baseball in the 70s, the 80s, and 90s, and kind of sort of, I have in my mind, I kind of have an idea of what the Kansas City Royals are generally like. And when I watch Bobby Witt, I get reminded of the Royals teams back in the day, right? I just do, because of the type of player he is, because of the athleticism, because of all the things he can do in the field. Do you feel that way as well when you see him? Because, you've been around that team for a long time, and it just seems that there's a Royals style, and Buck Martinez has talked about this. In my mind's eye, I have a picture of a Royals player, and it seems to me that he fits that picture perfectly.
Well, he really does, and to me, I'll take two players that have, tremendous history with this franchise. One is George Brett, the other Salvador Perez. Two totally different players. One's left-handed, one's right-handed. But Bobby Witt kind of is maybe a combination of the two of those, and then maybe a little bit more even, just because of the outrageous speed that he has. I mean, he can run so fast from home to third and from, stretching singles into doubles. I mentioned Perez and George Brett. Those are two players that you put them up in clutch situations, they are going to find a way to deliver. And that's what we're starting to see from Bobby Witt Jr. situations, kind of like last night. He hadn't driven in a run for 10 days before, or 10 games before last night. He gets up in a situation, from the gift that was presented to the Royals, and it has the two-run double. So he just finds a way to elevate himself in those clutch situations. And I think that's where he's kind of going to fit into that, that category, or that, that same sentence with the George Bretts and the Salvador Perez's from this Royals era.
Jeff, it's small sample size, but so far, what have you thought about the Jays lineup?
I'm really surprised about the middle of the lineup. I hate to say production, but it's more of like lack of production that we've seen. Like, I know last night, I didn't want to say anything until the game was over, because I knew Vladimir was going to come up in the last inning of the game. And, when you get a situation where he come up and do some damage, especially after he had to miscue at first base, you're thinking, you don't want to say anything, because as soon as you say, gosh, he doesn't seem like the same guy we're accustomed to seeing, sure enough, he's going to do some damage. So I waited until after the game to tell my broadcast partner, Vladimir just seems like something's not right with him right now. But you're seeing some other guys that maybe you wouldn't expect to contribute in their way. But, that middle part of that lineup is just not what it was when we saw these guys last year.
Yep. I'm intrigued by what Kansas City did this offseason with their pitching and the ads they made, Jeff. And from a distance, it seems to me that the organization really focused on sort of stabilizing things, not bringing in guys that are necessarily going to win Cy Young Awards, but stabilizing things, trying to, my friend Kevin here talks about the importance of predictability mm-hmm. When you're putting together a pitching staff. And I really get the sense that was a focal point for the Royals, right? Let's be predictable.
Yeah, and I think, you know, going back, say, over the last, say, 5 or 6 years of this, for this team, they drafted 4 and even 5 quality college pitchers in the 2018 draft. So they got to develop these guys. They got to get them to the big leagues, see if they can sink, see if they're going to swim, see what's going to happen with these guys. And that's what they were forced with to do with some of their young prospect arms. And when they learned that, you know, only maybe Brady Singer is the only one so far that's proven that he's going to be able to swim in the big leagues, they then had to go out and supplement some of those, you know, those voids with some experienced guys. So they bring in Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, two guys who, you know, they pitched together last year with the Padres. And when they brought those guys in, it was just like an immediate impact with regards to the, the mindset, the spillover to some of those younger players as far as the importance of throwing strikes, the importance of, you know, getting ahead of hitters, the importance of pitching to contact, not walking guys, just all the things that you do and you say all the time. But when you have guys out there as leaders doing that every 5 days, it really makes a big difference on some of the younger, less experienced pitchers. And we've seen Brady Singer really have, even though his game the other night was I guess, his only bad game of the year, we've seen him really elevate his game to a different level. And I think those guys, you talk about predictability, you kind of know what you're going to get. You're not going to get a dazzling no-hit performance from them, but you're going to have a guy that's going to probably be out there, you know, in the sixth or seventh inning, giving your team a chance to win a baseball game. And from a starting pitcher, really, that's all you can expect.
Jeff, is there an all-in year for Kansas City? When are they putting their chips in the middle of the table and saying, we're in, we're going to try and win this thing?
I think a lot of it depends on how things materialize in the Central Division, because our division is really wide open, much different than what you guys have in the East Division, where there's so many teams that you just don't know how good they can be. I think the Royals are in a division where, you know, going in, you're kind of thinking the Twins are the team, but maybe they've not shown that they are going to be that team. You didn't maybe expect the Guardians to be where they are, but maybe they are for real. Maybe the Royals have a chance. But I think the biggest thing for the Royals, first, you have to learn how to be competitive. You know, and they're kind of approaching the stage where you say, okay, now this is a competitive team. And then after you're a competitor, then you can be a contender. But let's get the competitive part out of the way before we even think about being contenders. So I think once they are at that stage where they feel like they can truly be a contender in the Central Division, and I think that's when they'll say, okay, it's time to make some moves. And we're no longer going to be subtracting at the All-Star break or at the trade deadline. We're going to be adding. We're going to be looking to make ourselves better.
Yeah.
Jeff, really good of you to join us today. Thanks so much. Terrific insight as always.
Thanks,
be well.
Jeff.
And we look forward to seeing you next week.
Absolutely.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, guys.
See you later.
Thank you. Take care. That is Jeff Montgomery, Royals pre- and post-game analyst. 304 career saves, 3-time All-Star.
Yeah. See, he's confused, too, about the middle of the order for the Blue Jays. So you're not the only one.
I'm not confused.
Well, you know.
No.
You're not confused?
I'm not anymore. I mean, what would I be confused about?
That's fair.
No, I'm not being a jack. Well, I am being a bit of a jackass. But what would I be?
Yeah, I think when I was saying that, and I heard myself say it out loud, I think I could understand why a lot of people are there. Like, it's just, yeah, there's so many unknowns with what you're going to get from Springer and Vladdy. I don't think so much from Bo. Like, I think the mental part of what Bo's trying to do is, you know, he's grinding when it just comes to that mental side of, do I actually try and hit more homers? Like, and I think the way he will do that is to pull the ball in the air, which is sort of not him. So he's fighting that.
And let's
but everybody
face it,
else, there's some unknowns there.
Well,
that's fair.
And let's face it. Bo has given us reason to trust that he's going to figure it out.
Yeah,
I mean, he has. Since he's been here, he's kind of, I think anyhow, and maybe I'm too much of a Bo fanboy, but to me,
he's a good player.
He's answered all the questions over and over. Yeah, I made my point. I think he's the guy you build the damn team around. Apparently, I
seems like you're the only one.
Well, I mean, I'm not the only one.
Well,
but
I'm in that camp too. I agree with you 1,000%. It's just, you know, it is amazing what money will sort of mentally make you do, right?
Dan O'Dowd said the other day. It can do two things.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely right. One, it creates freedom. Two, it creates expectations depending on the player. He talked about Bobby Witt Jr. He said in Bobby Witt Jr.'s case, it's created a freedom.
Yeah.
And I think personally, I don't know about you, if the Jays went to Bo and, you know, gave him a contract that is a contract that would keep him happy, I think it would create a freedom for him.
It's not going to hurt.
Do you think Bo's scared of expectations?
Absolutely not.
He didn't give a damn about expectations.
Absolutely not.
Because he thinks he's probably going to reach those expectations.
Yeah.
Vladdy, sometimes maybe what you need sometimes is just somebody to...
We believe in you. And
exactly.
The way we believe in you is to give you 3 or 4 year deal to say, you know, you are our first baseman. Yeah. You are our core. You can hit in the middle of the order.
And
we believe in you. We'll do everything
to make
you better.
And if you have a bad 6 weeks, we're still paying you as if we believe in you.
I mean, I understand how that sounds like we're making excuses for him. But, it's everything he's doing in the offseason, you know, losing weight and just trying to get himself as the best player he could possibly be. I didn't used to think it was a thing because I think you asked me this year and a half ago or something, and I sort of rolled my eyes and didn't really believe it.
Yeah, we've always had it.
Until you look around and you ask around, and then you hear people talk about it, and you hear people respond to certain questions, and it's a reality, right? That's how you feed your family. It's like you want to be the best player you can be, and then when you're not getting it, and then you try harder, the more you grip that bat, the tighter you grip it, the slower it looks, right?
Interesting hearing Jeff Montgomery talk about the closing and how he closed with an 88 mile an hour fastball. And I was thinking about...
He wouldn't even get a chance to do that now.
Oh, I was thinking about the way closers are used now. You made this point. The way closers are used now, it's all about pockets. And, you know, we've seen... Who's the Jays' best reliever right now? Jimmy Garcia.
Yeah.
When's he going to be used? Could be the eighth inning. Could be the eighth inning. I wonder if a guy like Jeff Montgomery could close now. If you could find a pocket...
And would he even get a chance to be in a pen? How many dudes in the pen do you know throw 88?
Yeah.
We were yelling and screaming about Mesa throwing 91.
I know.
What's wrong with him? How dare you?
It's fascinating.
It is crazy.
If you want, I mean, if you want a guy to just kind of read a little bit about Jeff Montgomery and his career, right? It is crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy how he was able to.
Well, you need better defenses when dudes are throwing 88, right?
They got to
catch the ball. Absolutely, they did. So you got, you know, cost the organization some more money.
Yeah.
Like, it's all about the money.
Imagine having 304 saves nowadays with an 88 mile an hour fastball.
Well, you wouldn't get a chance to do it. You know that. Like, the first thing out of people's mouth is he throws 97 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I think Jeff might be underselling himself. I think his fastball was. He was pretty crafty, and I think his fastball was a little more
crafty. Meant slumps when I played.
Meant what?
Slumps. Oh, this dude's crafty. Uh-oh. That means he added some tracks. He pitches backwards.
Yeah.
He's very unpredictable. He can throw an off-speed pitch for a strike. He can locate down.
You're going to go
home.
How
do I attack it? Do I try and pull it? You know, there's...
You're going to go home thinking, how the hell am I 0-4 against that?
Wrong. Absolutely. Yeah.
We've got tickets to give away to see the Dodgers and Blue Jays at the Rogers Center
on Sunday. I carried that first
half,
that first hour, by the way. So we expect better from you second hour. Maybe I should ask you a question this and let you go off on something.
I'm not. You're the expert here.
Expert.
I mean, my whole job, you're the star of the show. My whole job is just to tee up.
I got to come up with a question to get you fired up.
Well, I mean, you get me fired up every now and then. I kind of know what this team is. And
have you punted, Jeff, on the offense?
Have I punted? No.
Yeah.
No, I just know that they're going to have to win games.
You don't believe?
5-4. They're going to have to win games 5-4, and maybe they'll win.
The reality, if you're a Vladdy, you're a Bo, you're a George Springer, you're anybody else, you can't quit.
Yeah.
You got to keep grinding.
Hey, Jason Stark was part of the Corps of Athletic Writers that asked people about the top 10 front offices in MLB. We'll find out who made it and who didn't make it. Shut up. Don't do it. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan at Sportsnet.
Breaking down the top. in the NHL every day. The Jeff Merrick Show. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome back to Blair and Barker for a Wednesday. 7:40 is the first pitch tonight.
Why wouldn't it be?
As the Barker's Blue Jays take on the Kansas City Royals.
Yes, I'll sir. Take
him. Yariel Rodriguez on the mound for Barker's Blue Jays against I'll Alec Marsh. A reminder that tomorrow is an afternoon start. Now, the weather looks a little crapola tomorrow afternoon, but the plans right now are that we will be on postgame, and as always, we will be going to the back leg line during for our postgame show, 416-413-3959. You can leave questions, comments, recipes, jokes for Kevin Barker, and we will get to it. We've also got tickets to give away to see the Dodgers and Blue Jays at the Rogers Center on Sunday, April 28th. Let's bring in Jason Stark of The Athletic and the MLB Network. Mr. Stark, always good to have you join us. The Athletic
Hello,
did,
Jeff.
Hey, The Athletic did a...
what do you do?
The Athletic did a look at the top. I mean, this is just the top 10 front offices in MLB. You were part of it. Admit you were part of it. I saw your name on the bottom. I saw your name on the
you
bottom.
You voted, is what he's saying.
40 people. You couldn't find one person that said
not
the Jays front office was doing a good job?
Nary
not one?
Not a
like,
one.
Did you not talk to Ross Atkins? Or maybe Ross didn't even vote for himself. I don't know.
All right, that was not the question. We didn't go all 30 front offices and ask, do they do a good job? what the way we went about it was to ask, rank your top five front offices in the game. You cannot vote for your own. And so, you know, if you'd done a top 10, if you did a top 12, if you'd done something else, I'm pretty sure the Jays would have gotten some votes at that point. But top five, pretty hard, I think, to put them in there.
Yes.
Like, don't you?
Yeah. No. I'm not surprised at all. And you know, in point of fact, they were not the only team to not get mentioned. There were, by my count, I think 14, 16 teams, something like that. But I mean, it just gave me a chance to take a shot at the Jays front office. That's all. So.
And
I will move on. I will move on from it now. Was there, looking at the list though, was there a common theme? Mm-hmm. You know, like there were some that...
Minor league system or that kind of thing.
Yeah. You know, I can't say... That, you know what? The only thing that really surprised me, I guess, and maybe I shouldn't be, is the amount of people who... Or I shouldn't say the amount of people, but how well thought of the Yankees front office was. And I don't know why that surprised me. Maybe it's just because Brian Cashman's part of the furniture. He's been around forever. But... was there, anyhow, all that aside, I'm rambling here. Was there a common thread to what made a real good front office?
Well, I don't know that if there was one, like, it's probably not what you would expect. Okay. I know the teams that I've surveyed, the Dodgers, the Rays and the Guardians, I would say came up over and over. And then the Braves and Orioles for slightly different reasons. Mm-hmm. Like the Dodgers are the Rays with money.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty much what they are. And so the ability to maximize your roster, your system, the moves you make and performance year in, year out, given your market size, I think would be the basic criteria that was used. I mean, like, tell me the Guardians and the Dodgers, though, have anything in common. Mm. What they have in common is just how they think, how their leaders lead, how they manage resources within the framework of what's possible where they are. It's amazing that the Guardians continue to win and succeed and develop pitching and develop players, given the fact they have no revenues. They're so revenue challenged in their market that I think success per revenue dollars is probably the criteria with them. as it is with the Rays, even though those two teams do it in very different ways. And then the Dodgers, like, they have every advantage in the book, but they do everything well. The Yankees, since you brought them up, the Yankees got votes just because, like, they, I know they have a lot of dollars that they can throw at every problem. I get that. Not every throw is a complete, you know? Mm-hmm. There's definitely some receivers overthrown in recent years, but the ability to be good for 30 years, the ability to avoid ever having a rebuilding year,
yeah.
And just for whatever you may think of that team, may think of Brian Cashman, he's another guy. He's a leader. He's thoughtful. He's inclusive. They don't do anything without it being incredibly well thought through. Now, they're not the only team. I think you could say that about the Jays. But the Yankees haven't rebuilt for 30 years.
Yeah,
that's got to be worth something.
Yeah, you know, hearing you talk about the Guardians as well, two of the things that kind of stood out to me, the Guardians and the Twins. And, you know, the point that I found really interesting with the Twins was the Twins culture and how much players like the environment. I mean, they like, you know, the front office. It just seems as if the front office has really created a situation where its employees are happy, which is a good thing. But, you know, the Guardians...
Necessary thing.
It's a necessary thing. I don't know if the Guardians necessarily have the same culture, but I look at the Guardians. You know, Terry Francona is no fool. And he stayed around and had success. Jose Ramirez, a phenomenal player, he signed a below-market contract to stay there. There are still ways for smaller or mid-market teams to make people happy beyond just simply making them the highest paid person at their position, isn't there? And I kind of found that reassuring. Like, that's kind of nice to know.
Yeah, and, you know, the Guardians and Twins are kind of linked because Derek Valvey, who is the chief baseball officer with the Twins, came from Cleveland and, you know, kind of learned under that same culture. So it's not an accident mm-hmm. that the comments about those two franchises and those two front offices were similar. And the respect that they garner is for similar reasons. But there is something to be said for the culture you create throughout an organization. And that just, like, we talk about culture now in clubhouses, and it's kind of a substitute for what we used to call chemistry. And modern front offices don't like chemistry, but they do like culture, and they work to maintain culture. But culture doesn't begin and end at the clubhouse door. You know, to me, in order to succeed in anything, you have to include the people that you lead. You have to make them feel valuable, make their work and their opinions feel important, and make them feel like they're a part of every day at the ballpark. The winning doesn't happen without them, even though no one knows their name. And, like, that's incredibly important and incredibly underrated. And that was a theme that came up from time to time when I was doing my polling. You know, it's hard to connect the dots and say how much does this impact winning, but it does matter very much.
Jason, was there a shocking team? Like, you just talked about the Guardians. You talk a little bit about the Rays. You talk about the Dodgers. I don't think any of those, maybe the Guardians, a little bit of a shock. But you look at the Cardinals. Like, is there, you know, was there a team that you were digging into or somebody else was digging into that you were like, yeah, I could take it or leave it? Was there one of those teams?
You know, you look at those teams who got some votes at the bottom, Tigers, Mets, Reds. I was really surprised that the Mets got a vote and the Cardinals didn't get a vote.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. know, it just tells you things have gone awry in St. Louis. That was a team that was you couldn't run a franchise any better than they ran their franchise for 20 years.
Oh, the Cardinals way, man. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. And I, like, we just use that word culture. I always used to tell people the Cardinals lead the league in culture. But this is a sign that they've kind of lost their way. You know, the people who are the leaders there, John Mozeliak, Mike Gersh, you know, I like them a lot. I think they're both very thoughtful, and again, they're another group that has a thought through reason for everything it does. But they have really made a ton of mistakes over the last few years, and I think that's what this reflects. That one really surprised me. The Mets surprised me to the extent that I thought, given what has gone on there the last few years, with all of the turnover at the top, their inability to hire a president of baseball ops for, 3 years?
Yeah.
All the people they cycle through, I didn't think they'd get a vote. That's purely a show of respect for David Stearns. That's the way I view that one.
You know, back when the Yankees were putting, we're putting that run together when they had the core four, I remember talking to Brian Cashman in spring training one day at the end of spring training, sort of at the end of that run. And one of the things he mentioned was the Yankees generally made the right calls on our own players leading up to that run. You know, they picked the right guys, mm-hmm. basically was what he was saying. You know, Bernie Williams over Roberto Kelly. I mean, you can go Andy Pettit over Sterling Hitchcock, whichever way you want to go.
Absolutely.
When I look at the Cardinals, that's the thing that really stands out to me and surprises me, Jason, is just how wrong they've been about some of their players. Like, I wouldn't say they've undervalued them, but Randy Arozarena, like, they've misread some of their players.
Adolis Garcia.
I forgot about him. Yeah.
That would be another. They traded Tyler O'Neill for almost nothing. Yeah. And next thing they knew, he was leading the American League in home runs. I think that's exactly what that reflects. Can I mention another team I thought was really interesting to have conversations about? The Orioles. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought the Orioles would be at the top of every single list. Mm-hmm. And they were at the top of a lot. Just because, look at what they've done. Look at the guys coming through their system. Look at the track record in the draft, at the top of the draft, never missing, ever, year after year after year. That's amazing. But, you know, I don't believe this quote wound up in the piece, but somebody phrased it this way, said to me, like, what they've done has been incredible, but now here comes the hard part. Mm-hmm. Let's see how they navigate this part. As though, like, those players, they hit on those players, they're reaching the big leagues, they're really good, they're really fun, but now they've got to decide who to keep, how they're going to keep the band together, who to trade, who to keep, who to pay, who not to pay. That is a really difficult part of any front office's job. You just talked about how the Cardinals have missed on that. This is going to be kind of the test of the Orioles. How do they do at that?
Yeah, it's interesting because we had Dan O'Dowd on last week, and he was talking about that. It's great. It's wonderful that, you know, I think our friend Dan Connolly tweeted out last night that 8 of the 10 Orioles starters in the Orioles game were homegrown, drafted and developed
right
on the same night that 8 of their 10 players at AAA Norfolk were drafted and developed. That's wonderful. But now you get into who gets the multi-year contract? When do you give that multi-year contract out? And how does that set the table for the next multi-year contract? Like, I'm looking at some point, Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson, that you know, I don't think they're going to go year to year necessarily with those guys.
Gunnar is a Scott Boras client. Jackson Holliday is a Scott Boras client. Wow. I wish him luck there. Adley feels like the guy they should wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
It always tells us something when everybody knows that intuitively and it doesn't happen. Tells you it's not easy to make those deals happen. But, of course, they had an owner who was averse to making those kinds of investments until David Rubenstein fully takes over. Then we'll see where that goes.
Yeah, you know, and I've kind of made the point, I almost look at, again, this is a view from a distance, but I almost look at Adley Rutschman, to me, in terms of poise and everything. There's something, I hate using the phrase Jeter-esque, but there's something Jeter-esque about it. He's Jeter at a different position without the gift baskets, right?
How about Buster Posey-esque?
Perfect.
Buster Posey was...
Buster Posey-esque, yes.
I remember writing Buster Posey was the next Jeter.
Yeah.
You know, and he walked in from... You know, he was 23 years old, 24 years old, whatever it was. He was a starting catcher for a team that won 3 World Series, and he commanded the room from the first day he walked into it, and that's Adley.
Yeah, I just don't know how you know who's the core. When you call up a guy before another guy, how long's the leash?
Jackson Holliday's, it's going to be fascinating to see how that plays out, frankly.
Jason, you know as well as anybody, you go in locker rooms, chemistry's a giant deal, especially teams that are trying to win. Blue Jays are going through that a little bit, right, where sort of everybody's got their little window of what they're trying to contribute and trying to call these young guys up. I was a young player once. You know, it wasn't so much about the team. It was more about me staying in the big leagues. What's that saying? It's not hard getting there. It's hard staying, right? There's a little bit of that, too. So the organization's got a little road here to – try and figure out that part of it. What kind of veteran you bring in? What veteran's right for young guys? Like, that's a lot. Like, there's a lot there to work out, I think.
A lot. And, you know, I saw them a lot in spring training. And, you know, you watch the team they would take on the road. It was like watching the Futures game. And, you know, like, these are the guys who can't even make their team.
Yeah.
Okay. Look, you know it, I know it, and these players know it. There are only 9 slots on the lineup card.
Yeah.
And there are only 26 big league lockers. And not everybody can fit inside that room, can fit on that lineup card. And, like, they could field 2 teams and be more competitive than a couple we could name.
Yeah.
But that's not how this is going to work. And so I just thought that was a really interesting observation about what their front office faces. And you guys obviously agree.
Yeah, no, and it was interesting. I'm just reading the write-up on the Orioles. The last line about they never tried to push too fast, let it all evolve, and they're going to reap the benefits of that patience for a long time. Mm-hmm. That is true, but at some point, the reaping is going to involve big dollars.
Yeah, look at the Astros right now, okay? Because the Astros window started 2015. Now it's 2024. I don't know if this is the end of the window. I would vote that it probably is. But they have largely had the same core for all that time, and they had great players coming through their system, and they just kept coming. They didn't hit on every high pick, but they hit on a lot of them. Big international success, one of the greatest trades ever for Yordan Alvarez before he'd ever even played a minor league game, right? And they were loaded. Like the fifth starter pitched a no-hitter in the World Series, you know, Christian Javier, loaded. But you can't maintain that. It's just not possible. Look at the Warriors. It's not possible to maintain it forever. But if you're going to ask me who's got a longer runway, Orioles or Astros, I think the answer is the Orioles.
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
No, because I think and one of the things that Alex Anthopoulos talked about learning from Pat Gillick is also the virtue of turnover. Like when you have a team that is maybe not a generational team, but is consistently winning, there is something to be said for turning it over a little bit, keeping it fresh, bringing guys in. And I look at the Orioles, and they will be able to do that, Jason, without missing a beat, at least, you know, from where I sit.
Jason, you think any chance the Astros would trade a guy, say like Tucker? Me and Jeff always talk about the Blue Jays and
you talk
adding
about
offense and, You know, you would never think you'd ever look at the Astros this year, but say they're 10 or 12 games under 500 at the trade deadline. Any chance they'd trade one of those bats, you think?
I mean, they're 10 under now.
Yeah.
So they're not dead yet, but if it gets to 12, if it gets to 15, if it doesn't turn around fast, their odds go down so precipitously that how could they not think about it? Here is the problem, as I see it, Kevin. Jim Crane, mm-hmm. when he signed Josh Hader, so that was, what, January, 3 months ago, said, we'll never have a rebuilding year here as long as I'm the owner. And I know a lot of front office eyebrows that went bobbing up and down.
Yeah.
Because the only path for them to never have a rebuilding year, given the guys who've gone out the door, given all the prospects that they have traded to fill whatever hole they needed to fill, and given where they are on the cycle with Bregman and Tucker in particular, involves spending massive amounts of money. Steve Cohen-like amounts of money. Jim Crane has never done that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who's going to explain that to him.
Yeah.
Okay? Because he's the loudest voice in the room. And that, you know, the loudest voice in the room is the one that gets listened to. And so I think he'd probably fire everybody before he decided he was going to trade Kyle Tucker. I don't know the answer to that. It's going to be a really interesting dynamic.
Yeah.
Jason, really good of you to do this.
It's wonderful.
Thank you so much. Great info as always.
Thanks a lot.
Yep. Always great to talk to you guys. Thanks.
Take care. Jason Stark of The Athletic.
Oh, you'd have to make a call. Like, yeah. Really, if let me. Any chance whatsoever, you have to make a call.
Let me kind of go over a little bit what the Athletic article was. What are the top 10 front offices in MLB? They polled 40 executives, and Jason explained how the vote turned out. The Dodgers point, and they gave point totals, 5-4-3-2-1. The Dodgers got 284 points, the Rays 258, the Braves 138, Guardians 101, Orioles 91. Brewers 52, D-backs 43, Rangers, Twins, Yankees, Phillies, Mariners, Astros, Tigers, Mets, and Reds. The teams that didn't get top five votes, as we mentioned, there were 16 of them, and I'm just call them up right now. The Red Sox, the Jays, the Royals, the White Sox, the Athletics, the Angels, the Nationals, the Marlins, the Cardinals, the Padres. That was a little surprise.
Yeah.
The Rockies, the Giants, the Pirates was a little surprise, and the Cubs. But
I don't know what the checklist is. Like, how do you make your decision? Is it money? Is it winning?
I think it changes. I think Jason was right. If you want to have fun, you can figure out the wins per dollar value.
Sure.
But I also think in the case of some of them are self-explanatory. Like, I think if we put 100 baseball fans in the room and said, would you consider the Rays front office, not the Rays team, not the Rays ownership, would you consider the Rays front office to be one of the best in baseball?
Yeah.
Most people would
agree. Sure.
Because they've maintained. But the Guardians are fascinating, and it's a really interesting read because it's a nuanced read. Like, a lot of it isn't just, well, we don't like this GM, we like this GM. That's not what it's about. A lot of it is about teams that make the right reads and players, and I cannot stress how difficult that is. We talk about the Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
Would you have a redo of the Varsho deal right now? Probably. But last year when the deal was made, you know, we said, hey, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is not re-signing here.
Mm-hmm.
Gabriel Moreno, great defensive catcher.
Probably not going to play for a while. Yep.
Just because they were committed to Alejandro Kirk.
Yeah.
Well, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And it is remarkable how the good teams make the right read on their players. Now, this is where it's going to get interesting as well for the Orioles. At some point, they might have to move those players. And what happens if...
Oh, there's no doubt. They got too many.
What happens if you are all in on Jackson Holliday, but Colton Cowser turns into the better player? You just don't know.
Yeah.
What if you end up trading Colton Cowser? So... There are
that called up first, and how long of a leash they get—that's a big deal, right? Like, you got to sort of, because you can mess a player up by either calling them up too soon or calling them up too late or send them down too soon or not give them a long enough leash. Like, there's a lot goes into that. I wouldn't want that job. I mean, again, they got a really good team and they're going to have a good team for a while, but you could mess some players up.
I remember having a conversation with Tony LaCava and J.P. Ricciardi when this was years ago, but it was interesting because we were talking about, okay, when is a good time to bring up a top prospect? Is it when the team really needs them to come up and contribute?
Yeah.
Or is it when you've got a nice, comfortable environment and the team's doing well? Maybe he's not going to play every day, but you know what? He's going to be brought up to a winning environment where guys are going about their business every day. We got a chance to go to the postseason. Mm-hmm. Boom, boom, boom. It's interesting. A lot of teams have different opinions on when to do it. Their opinion was that it depends on the prospect. There are some prospects who are so good that you just need to get them up because they're not learning anything at AAA.
They do have something going for them. Adley and Gunner look like no-brainers. Yeah.
And Gunner Henderson, let's not forget, was not a first-round pick.
Yeah, Gunner, you see him offensively, holy moly.
He's a beast.
Man.
Like, I think that, you know, Adley Rutschman's the MVP type guy there, but Gunner Henderson,
wow,
he's something else. Oh. And the other thing with Gunner Henderson, he's got a bit of...
He don't like you.
He does not like you if you're in another
American
team.
American League East, like, that's perfect.
That's perfect.
Oh, it is. Because you want to hate the Orioles a little bit, don't you? Like, you do a little bit. I think it's better for baseball if you do a little.
And you know that if there is... It was funny because I wrote an article in Sportsnet.ca about, you know, how there's sort of aren't that many great rivalries in the American League East anymore. And maybe, you know, what we need is the Orioles to develop some sort of jackass. Like, we really do. Yeah. Either that or Buck Showalter to come back and manage the team. And I was talking to one of the Yankees writers, and we were going back and forth. And he said, do not underestimate Gunnar Henderson's ability to become that in
you
a positive
that.
Way. That jackass.
Well, he's good enough to be that.
The
you got to be really good, right, to be that guy on top of being good.
Got a little bit of that.
Yeah.
We have got tickets to see the Dodgers and the Jays on Sunday. We're going to give that away after the break, and Joe Siddall will join us as well. Don't go anywhere. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It feels like a Friday around here. You're all
you know
fired
what,
up.
You know what it was.
And everybody in the back room there is all fired up.
We had a day off of you, and it was good for us.
Yeah.
Look at your face. That's why you come in, you got a little bit more energy, right? Separation. It's like, you know, you get it started a little sooner. You make contact where you
want
to make
contact. That's what you
call
winning. You were under the... you got the wrong impression. You're under the impression that I give a rat's ass.
You do.
Think.
You do care. Oh, you
just
do.
No, I don't.
You want a hug?
No. I don't want to hug. Maybe somebody should hug Vladdy. Maybe that'll
hey,
work.
Hey, hey, hey. They're grown-ups. He'll figure it out.
I'm sure. It's only been, what? Anyhow, today's trivia question. We are giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets. Most of you have got to realize by now that part of this is an act.
What are you talking about?
I mean, back and forth.
I'm not acting.
Okay.
No.
We're giving you the chance to win Blue Jays tickets all season long here on Blair and Barker. All you have to do is text the correct answer to our daily baseball trivia question to 590-590.
Yeah.
Yesterday's question and answer was, how many All-Star game appearances did Justin Turner make as a member of the Dodgers? The answer is two.
Wow. Some reason I'm thinking one. I don't know why.
I didn't even think about it. Today's question is to win tickets to see the Jays and Dodgers at the Rogers Center on Sunday, April 28th. Okay, this is pretty easy. I mean, this is beneath us. Anyhow. This four-time All-Star and Gold Glove winner bookended his career with the Dodgers, but also played four seasons in Toronto. This four-time All-Star and Gold Glove winner bookended his career with the Dodgers, but also played four seasons in Toronto. You can text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590.
Doesn't roll off the tongue. You'd have to think about it.
No, I get it.
You didn't?
That's right away.
Right away.
Right away. Four-time All-Star, Gold Glove winner, bookended his career with the Dodgers.
Infield or outfield?
Four
Well, give the tell me
he played four seasons in Toronto. No, I'm just going to read it again, and then we'll move on. Because I don't want people to think that because you said, is it an infielder or outfielder, that now people are thinking. Don't pay no attention to what Barker said. Just like normal. This four-time All-Star and Gold Glove winner bookended his career with the Dodgers, but also played four seasons in Toronto. Text the answer to 590-590 for your shot to win. See rules at sportsnet.ca/590, and you could be going to see the Jays and the Dodgers.
Yeah.
On Sunday.
Yeah. You're picking that up.
Do we have Joe Siddle? Let's bring in Joe Siddle, Blue Jay Central analyst on Sportsnet. How you doing, Joe?
Very good, fellas. How we doing?
We're doing well. Basically, we spent the last 90 minutes talking about Vladdy.
That's not true.
That's not true. No, we didn't.
That's
we didn't
not
spend
true.
The last 90 minutes talking about
Vladdy. 8 or 9 minutes.
Maybe eight or nine. But we are going to ask you about Vladdy. we've had a chance to bury ourselves. You might as well.
I took up for him.
Yeah, he did take up for him.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. I'm going to take a different path here because we had somebody call Blue Jays Talk last night. They got to move Vladdy down in the order. My friend Barker, who is well ahead of things, said, okay, where and who hits second? And, of course, I didn't have an answer for that. But I'm going to ask you this, and this isn't – see, I don't think this is a benching. But, Joe, do you think there is a point where John Schneider has to just say to Vladdy, we're going to give you a day off, and I mean a real day off?
A couple of days
yeah,
off,
there you
maybe.
Go.
Yeah.
Just
–
Yeah.
A couple of days off. If we play 19 innings, you got the day off.
Chipper Jones used to come on our show and say that he would go to Bobby Cox and say, I need 48 hours.
Is what he said.
I just can't. Yeah. I couldn't hit water if I fell out of a boat. I need it. I need to walk away. Help me do that. Is you think Vladdy's there, John needs to do that?
I think it could certainly work because the last night, I think it came to a head both offensively and then with the play at first base, and it couldn't have ended worse for him or for the Blue Jays. And Kev, you and I both know that when you're scuffling and just a game or two away is a great thing, but we weren't good enough players to afford that. So
nope.
We couldn't do it.
Nope.
But when you get a guy like Vladdy that, you know, we'll keep saying it. I'm not sure what your opinion was earlier, Kev, but I'm guessing you're saying like this guy's got oozing talent that we can only dream of. Mm-hmm. And it's clearly not going very well right now. It didn't go as well as we thought it was supposed to last year, so it's a carryover. We just got all tantalized by that 2021 season, right? I'll put my arm up right now and say I thought this guy was going to be a perennial MVP candidate. And it's not the same now, and I've spoken at length many different times, whether it was on our shows or on your show here, about what I think did it. I think the swing is different than it used to be. Why that is, I have no idea, whether he changed something or somebody asked him to change something or whatever the case may be, but the bat's not coming through the zone the way it used to. And I mean bat angle, I mean his move, his gather. Kev, I've heard you talk, so many moving parts. Absolutely, there's a lot going on there. But the bottom line is it's not moving the way it used to. And I can't figure out for me, guys, I said all winter long to myself, I can't wait to get down to Florida for spring training because I'm just going to sit and watch Vladdy take BP for a couple of days just to see if there's anything different.
Yeah.
And the first thing we noticed
was the hands
stayed high, right, over, but I didn't see anything else that I was hoping to see, like the old swing, like that gather and really getting engaged with the core and tipping that barrel and then coming firing through where he stays behind the baseball so well. How many times do we talk about staying behind the baseball? Now he's got that gather, and it's kind of just this stagnant kind of, the hands are just, everything's just blah, and then the move goes forward, and therefore the path is kind of steep. He thought he hit that ball pretty well to center yesterday. I did too. It was that changeup, though, of course, from Walker, and I think he probably just pulled off it a little bit because that's what he does. It's not right. The swing is not the same as it used to be.
Okay, we've seen Jose Berríos make mechanical changes on the mound. It's repeatable. It looks the same. He locates more. He goes deeper in games. We've seen Yusei Kikuchi do the exact same thing. Too many moving parts. Ain't going to work. I can't repeat that. Ball out of the glove, right? It's real simple. I ain't got to think about it. The only question that I would have with Vladdy is that point, right? You sort of seen this kind of thing for what, a year and a half now, and to begin the season. Why is it just sort of not obvious that he's at least buying into right? It's the point of contact. Joe, when I was listening to you talk there, that's what it's about. You go back and look at video when he had his really good season. It's point of contact. He's catching everything out in front of the front leg. Like, that's just the way it was. All of those things at the lower half were meeting, and it was colliding front of the knee. It's not happening now. Why don't you shorten? Maybe instead of a gather, it's a toe tap. Not saying you're married to that thing for your entire career, but at least visibly give you something to look forward to when you come to the field every day. Instead of doing the same drill, I'm assuming it's the same drill because it looks the same on the field during the game, that you coming and you're doing that hoping that the result is different. That's the only thing, Joe, is who do you blame for that part of it? Like, buy into something different. At least maybe that would help you collide with the baseball in a different area more consistently.
The question you're asking me right now is the exact same question I just referred to over the winter. When I got to spring training, I was expecting something different. And sure, the hands are staying higher. It's a subtle difference, and maybe he's onto something. But it's the bat getting through the zone. When you say catching things out front, I think it's because before what happened, when that front foot came back and he gathered, it was like he was engaged in that core and he was tipping that barrel a little bit more. And then it was bang, he was flying. And when you stay behind the baseball, you create that space, Kev. Remember that fastball he hit? I'll never forget it. Off Cole, it was like 98 inside off the plate, and he got to it. That wasn't an accident. He created space. He has zero chance of doing that right now. Absolutely zero. And the only thing, I mean, we're not in the cage. We're not in the meetings. Who knows? Sure, there are a lot of voices. I get all that stuff. But the bottom line is I think when you're successful as a big leaguer, not even like a Vladdy, let's just say you're a pretty good mid-range major leaguer and you've been in the big leagues for 5 years and you've got a nice little career. Guys can be hesitant to change, but then when you just referred a couple names to me, like a Barrios and like a Kikuchi, those guys went into the workshop and they tried to figure things out and they made adjustments.
Veteran guys.
People always ask me, do you think Vladdy can do that again, or do you think it was a blur? I was like, yeah, he can do it again. If he did once, he can do it again. I believe he can. And, you know, Kev, you've played with a lot of guys, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Anybody that's played the game, you've had guys on your team that, and Jeff, I'll talk Expos for a second. My first year of professional baseball was in Jamestown, New York, in the New York Penn League in 1988. And you know who was on that team? Marquise Grissom. And he stood out from the rest of us. Let me tell you, when he took batting practice, it was different. And Wilfredo Cordero was on that team. Yeah. Those guys were just, they're different. The bat comes off the ball different. You'll hear Vladdy's teammates now talk like that. Like, what a freak he is, the things he can do. We all talk like that because we've kind of seen it, and you do see it and understand it. But now he's got to get those things right again. Why it's taken this so long is baffling to me.
Yep.
Reluctance to change, perhaps, but my goodness, I think if you weren't this winter willing to do something and get back to the way you're used to swinging, you should be by now a month into the season. And it's only a month. I don't want to go crazy, but it's because it's that carryover from last year. And again, it wasn't like this. It's not like he hit 197 with three home runs last year, right? Like, he still can do amazing things. He might hit a home run tonight just because he's so darn skilled. His hand-eye is so good. And when the ball comes off his bat, he's so good. But the consistency is something he's always going to fight if he doesn't have those moves I'm referring
Absolutely.
To that he had before.
Yep.
So, Joe, we're told that somebody in the organization, that Addison Barger, is going to be brought up. I presume that means Kevin Kiermaier is going to the IL with the hip flexor. Look, I mean, Addison Barger has been, you know, went out of spring training, started hitting a AAA, and has kept on hitting. How do you think the Jays will use him?
Use him. Get him in the lineup tonight.
Yeah. Listen, Barger and I talked about this.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, he's played right field. I think he's played some third base. I don't know about left field, but I mean, I'm with you guys. Yeah. I get him in.
Who cares?
Why not? He's getting some energy.
Yeah.
Wherever he's played, get him in the lineup.
Yeah.
This team needs a shot of energy offensively right now, and we know what Schneider did when he came up last year.
Yeah.
Maybe Barger can provide that spark right now. And, you know, sometimes a guy comes up and does that and guys around him start swinging. It's just a good vibe, right? It's a good feeling in the dugout because, Kev, you know, if you're in that Blue Jays dugout last night, it's kind of like the fans are feeling. It's just a blah feeling. They know they're not hitting. They know they're not performing to their expectations. They know up and down, 1-9, what's going on. But I'd love to see if Barger's here, I'd love to see him in the lineup. I don't care if he plays third and kind of fluff a sits, you know, figure out the outfield, throw Varsho into center and throw Schneider into left or Biggio. I don't care who, but get him in the lineup because you need something right now to try to kickstart things.
With Gosman's outing last night, should I be impressed or worried?
I'm more worried.
Yeah.
That sounds crazy, eh? No run.
Kevin and I talked about this last night. I mean, just not using his fastball as much. And
He pitched away from his fastball. And remember that game that he didn't have his velo? He pitched away from his fastball, but he pitched away from his fastball with the slider, which was the craziest thing in the world to me because that's his third best pitch, and it's not a great pitch. Last night he went splitter heavy, and he got lots of soft contact and ground balls. Like it worked against a team that, you know, maybe aggressive younger team, but it worked and the numbers looked great. But and it felt like the velocity was way down, but it wasn't right. I think he was right around 90 on a couple of those fastballs to Frazier before he doubled there in that pinch hit. I think it was in the fourth, maybe, or not the pinch hit, but the double that ended up leading to a crazy rally. But I don't want to say he needs his velo. I am one of those people that velo helps. I talked about Jordan Romano last night on our show. Like, when he's got his velocity, everything plays up. And I think when Kevin has velocity, everything plays up because you can't just kind of sit on that splitter and try to react to the fastball then. So I don't know what it is. Maybe the shoulder's still lingering. You know, he looked good the one start. I thought he was back. And then when I see that last night, it's like he just doesn't seem right. And I always stay concerned because he had a shoulder issue in the spring and abbreviated spring and all these issues we've been talking about. So yeah, I mean, great the way he got out of that, but that might have been a combination, yes, of him being savvy and pitching and maybe also taking advantage of a team that kind of played into his hand with all the splitters he threw them.
Yeah. What would be a step forward for Yariel Rodriguez tonight? Not that he's been a disappointment so far, but what would it, in your mind, Joe, constitute a continued improvement?
Well, it's a good question. I thought it was a nice outing that last one in San Diego, and I think he mixed his pitches a little bit more. He broke out the curveball and the splitter a little bit more. We know he loves that slider, but regardless of the pitches he throws, we know he spins the ball really well. All of those pitches have good action, good movement. So I think we're going to see that. You know, that's what we heard about him when he came here, right, is that he can really spin the baseball. I think I had heard he's got a cutter as well. Maybe he breaks that out. Who knows? But he just looks, is polished a good word? I mean, this is not a young kid that just got called up to the big leagues, right? This guy's pitched on some pretty big stages, and I think he's responded so far on the big league stage very well. I just expect him to keep improving and looking good. And who knows where this takes him. I think we all know that he's probably not going to start every 5 days for the rest of the season, but with his workload that they're going to monitor. But I just look for a lot of the same. And if a point comes later in the season where he's got to be that 2 or 3 inning guy out of the bullpen, that'd be extremely valuable as well. Those guys are valuable. Yep. Good to have, right? Mm-hmm.
Joe, really good of you to do this, my friend. Thanks so much.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys.
Have a good day. Yep. Be well. Joe Siddle, Blue Jay Central. Again, Blue Jay Central tonight, 7:00. First pitch is at 7:40. From Kansas City, Yariel Rodriguez against Alec Marsh. Tomorrow is an afternoon start, 2:10. Jose Berríos against Cole Ragans. That is going to be a lot of fun. Berríos, 4-0, 0.85 ERA. Got to be a candidate for American League Pitcher of the Month.
Of course.
Yeah, has to be a candidate
for
American League Pitcher of the Month. Man, just imagine if you can, you know, pitching wins. But if Jose Berríos can get through the first month of the year with 5 or 6 wins and an ERA of under 1.
He's very predictable. Wow. Like, again, it's the simplified approach with the mechanics. I lift it, I throw it. Like, it ain't no, I step back, I got to make sure I'm balanced over the rub. Like, there's none of that. I pick it up, I throw it. I pick it up, I throw it. I pick it up, I throw it. I stay in my lanes. Like, it's real. It gets to the point where to do it over and over and over and over again and face these guys 2 and 3 times through the order, you got to always make it look the same. To be able to change speeds, get guys out front, give them different looks, the mechanics got to be identical all the time. And to just buy into, dude, this ain't good enough. And to be able to go in an offseason and change it, give these dudes kudos. Like, I understand they've been paid. And that helps.
Well, I see.
But it is. If you want to get paid again, like you say, you got to listen to people that know what they're talking about and go, your stuff's off the charts. There ain't too many lefties that's got that thing. Throw strike one and be efficient. You know, action in 3 pitches, you do that because your stuff is going to be really good.
This gets back to the whole idea that a long-term contract can give you freedom. If you're Jose Berríos, you got a long, this team is committed to you. You like it here. You're, it's easy. If you're Jose Berríos, you go home at the end of the year and go, okay, I can do better. I've got another level I can get to. It's just the mindset of being able to do that, knowing that.
Exhale, I got my money. Exactly. I don't have to worry about every single month and every bat and every pitch.
Exactly.
Matters to, you know, just so much to me and my family. You can sort of exhale and just say,
you're a human being.
You know, they're yelling and screaming about the process. Well, pay me and the process will work out, right? It's that kind of thing. Again, we're not trying to make excuses for anybody.
No.
But again, everybody has a job. Yeah. Everybody wants to get paid what they think they're worth. And when that company or organization doesn't, you put more pressure on yourself. You try harder. Yeah. Normally, when you try harder, you're at your best.
Yeah.
And that just sort of seems what it looks like now.
So 7:40 is the first pitch tonight. Tomorrow afternoon is 2:10. We'll be doing Blue Jays talk following the game tonight.
Winning edition.
It's going to be a winning edition.
I think so, too.
I got a winning edition.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, we'll be doing Blue Jays talk on TV and radio following the game. And what we've been doing all along is we've been asking you to send in voice notes or leave us a voicemail on the back leg line, 416-413-3959. Do that, and we will use your call on Blue Jays Talk. We'll get a chance to answer your questions. As always, please, please, please leave your name and location. It just allows us to personalize it.
Absolutely.
And I don't know. I've worked all around this. Maybe I've, wherever you're calling from, maybe I've been there. I mean, you know, I can always come up with some trivia about a certain area. I know my way around the country. Nick from Toronto called us and left this voicemail.
Hi, this is Real Kipper from Toronto. Can you guys cut your show a little earlier for us tonight? It's game day.
Well, who's he talking about? Who's playing today?
Who's playing tonight?
Who's playing?
I don't know. The Jets played last night.
Who did they lose? Win or lose?
Canada's team played last night. I don't know. Are the Raptors still playing?
Not that I'd remember.
I don't even know. Do we even talk hockey in this network anymore?
It's a great question.
I don't know.
Huh.
You know, I mean,
never heard of them.
We get so focused. Anyhow, so that. Obviously, Kipper and Bourne are right behind us. Huh. Well, actually, they're outside the door.
Well, they're trying to open the door quickly because they want to run
be on
in
after
and,
us. And it must be a big day.
Wait your turn.
Sam McKee's wearing a tie.
No kidding.
He's got a tie.
Must be game
on.
Day.
It's got to be game
day. How come you don't wear a tie?
I threatened to do it, and you say you're going to punch me in the neck if I wear a tie.
That's a good reason not to.
I will. I will show up with a tie
you
and
will.
A jacket.
Huh.
But you'll get upset. So anyhow, tomorrow, following the game.
We can't wait.
Blue Jays talk. Yeah, we can't wait.
We love talking to the people.
We do love talking to the people. Blue Jays talk immediately following the
why
game.
Why are you smiling?
416-413-3959.
Winning edition, too.
I'm not smiling.
Three out of four. Win the series.
And then the Dodgers come into town this week.
Boo them like crazy.
We got a fun show. I'm not going to tell you who's on it. Well, the manager's on it Friday, but we got a fun
Boo
show
Boo Turner,
Friday.
Too, if he's hugging Dodgers. On the field.
What?
Yeah. Turner, you know it's going to be all buddy-buddy with all his buddies from the Dodgers. Yeah.
Maybe we'll ask the question tomorrow. Should Jays fans boo
that's a silly,
Shohei Ohtani?
That's a silly question.
Should they boo Shohei Ohtani?
Why would you? Like,
I'm just throwing it out there because I got a minute and a half to kill.
I mean,
throwing it out there.
He's hitting between two Hall of Famers. Like,
huh?
You wouldn't want to do that if you were a really good hitter, hit between two Hall of Famers? Let me answer that for you. Absolutely, you would. Absolutely.
I still don't think there's anything wrong with booing.
For what reason?
As a release?
Well, you think he's gonna lose sleep and you know, well, how many? He's almost got 40 hits already.
Like
it's
I like it's
gonna.
Despise that dude.
It's like
got,
is that gonna hurt his feelings enough that he ain't gonna get
he's
any
got
hits? Yeah.
No, I'm just saying it could be a cathartic sort of release for people.
Bet on it.
Could be a cathartic sort of release for people. I don't know. Maybe if you're still chapped.
Are you
about the whole thing? I would
you're
do it.
You're shafted. He decided to go to L.A. and
I would do it.
Toronto.
I'd boo him. Anyhow, we'll talk about
you're
gonna that
boo
tomorrow.
Because you'll be there tomorrow. Lead the charge.
You mean Friday.
Be that guy
I'm
that stands
be,
up. And
I'm not going to be booing. I don't boo people.
You boo me.
I boo you. I don't boo people. Kipper and Barner next.
Oh, it's your turn to come in now. We're over.
Be quiet, Parker. We'll be back with Blue Jays Talk tomorrow following the afternoon game. Join us tonight for Blue Jays Talk on the radio. See ya.